This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
They're side by side. Ammo on the inside. Alcon in traffic. Goes high. They touch wheels. Oh. Al Jr. into the wall hard. Emerson Fittipaldi keeps on going. They touched wheels. Al Jr. into the wall, and Emerson Fittipaldi will lead them back to the yellow flag.
I lost the backhand. The car slide. I just hit Al Jr., and I was lucky that I didn't crash.
And I was okay. I got out of the car and took off my helmet, and I started heading out towards the track. And safety crewman, he stepped in front of me. He goes, "Al, where are you going?" I said, "I'm going out to the track." And he goes, "What, you want to flip him off?" And I went, "Yeah." You know, like, duh. And he stepped aside, "Go right ahead." And so I went out onto the track with the full intention of telling him and showing him exactly what I thought about what had happened. You know, Emerson led basically the entire day, and he was coming around to get the checkered flag for his first Indy 500. It was about winning. He didn't do anything intentionally. And so I clapped my hands and gave him thumbs up and told him that was the best slide job that anybody ever gave me.
Motor Speedway. The month of May is officially here. Indy cars on track today. Nuts on the oval for the Indianapolis 500. We'll pace ourselves and work into that coming up on Monday. It is road course weekend for the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. We start, though, with another classic from the Indianapolis 500. Closing moments and commentary from the combatants from 1989. Al Unser and Emerson Fittipaldi, courtesy of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. Hello, welcome to Trackside, presented by Verizon from the fourth floor media center at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is here from the Indianapolis Star. This is a familiar sight.
Rain?
However, what isn't familiar, so we're used to rain here at IMS, and this is another reminder that it's different, so I beat the rain. It starts sprinkling. I get up here in the media center, and I'm sitting here. Indy Lights practice is going on. It starts to sprinkle. Everyone pits, and they sit there for a few minutes. And then it just starts pouring. And then all of a sudden, a race car zooms down the front stretch. Now, granted, he's going the wrong way, but it still kind of startles you to see a car running in the wet on the main straightaway from this vantage point, because we've sat here for so long, and when it rains, we know things are done, and it just for a brief moment shakes you back in. Oh, yes, yes, this is a different weekend.
I made a rookie mistake. I was in the garage area when it started to sprinkle, and I thought, I can get a few more things done while I'm down here. And then it cut loose, and I had seen the weather map, and I knew it was going to, when it arrived, it was going to be healthy. And it sure was. I got stuck there for about 45 minutes, a true rookie mistake.
It rained really hard last night when I was on the way home from the Talk of Gasoline Alley, and It rained and stormed so hard here that there was damage, maybe the wrong word, but there was certainly some disruption here. There was some damage to some things in the paddock area.
Yeah, I had a story at IndyStar.com about that this morning, mostly about tents and signage and covers and so forth. You know, like the Wing and Wheels logos that covered the North and South Vista, they got torn up a little bit. And so it was mostly, I would call, a nuisance rather than damage.
And then we were fortunate, though, that as far as IndyCar is concerned, they were able to complete the day, because the forecast looked like we might only get one practice session in, and they got both practice sessions in today. Scott Dixon was the fastest, Simon Pagenaud, then Graham Rahal, Sebastian Bourdais, Will Power rounding out the top five. Michaela Lotion stands out a little bit there in P6, then Joseph Newgarden, James Hinchcliffe, Juan Pablo Montoya, and Ryan Hunter-Reay. What notes do you have throughout
the day? Well, first of all, I would say that that's the second practice. There's a combined.
Oh, I thought I had the combined.
Rahal ended up fourth, and it's not a big deal. They're basically in the same order.
Here's combined. There you go. It's Dixon, Power, Pagenaud, Rahal, Bourdais, still Lotion in sixth, Newgarden, Hinchcliffe, Montoya, Hunter-Reay. That is
just
the combined.
A little bit different. Yep. And nothing to get too alarmed about it. Here's what I draw from it. Nothing. Because we have seen in the other practices this season, normally that's the Friday practice. We'll call that day one practice. Day one doesn't transfer to day two. Now, largely, look, we'll all be shocked if Scott Dixon and Will Power aren't in the hunt for the pole. So there won't be any surprise there, but you can't really draw a lot of conclusions. I think we saw the debut of most of the new Honda engines. I mean, I know we did, but we saw that. But I don't know, again, if we can read much into it yet, because it just seems magically almost that the Chevrolets show up on qualifying sessions with this extra oomph that they didn't have in the practice, or they didn't show in the practice.
Well, the reports are that it's not magic, that it actually does have extra oomph. So the question is now, has Honda decided to bring a little extra oomph and take a little chance when it comes time to go qualifying?
Yeah, I don't know. I was joking about magically. It's just like they haven't shown their cards, and so people call it sandbagging. I say they just haven't put the pieces in the right order, probably, to do the maximum lap.
Well, you don't need to do the maximum lap on Friday and on Thursday.
That.
So yeah, it's smart.
I can't read anything into what happened today. That's
sure.
The point.
Issues, Matt Brabham. Didn't get track time, and that's critical for him as a rookie. The wheels literally fell off three laps in, or at least one of them did.
Yeah, he had a different issue in the afternoon, and you know, there were some guys. Hinchcliffe, for example, he had an engine smoking, but there was smoke coming from around the compartment. There was a explanation given to me, and it mechanically was kind of like I went, oh, okay. One of those kind of answers. But it wasn't an engine per se, and they spent the first practice session in the garage area just kind of checking everything out, making sure things were in good shape. And, you know, we had a few spins, a few adventures through the kitty litter, you know, with Aloshin and Hinchcliffe then later as the session was ending. No damage for anybody, no real concerns for anybody. I think just from your standpoint, track time for Matthew Brabham would be the one thing that I would be concerned about. And, you know, ultimately he's still got three more sessions to go. So it's not the end of the world.
It also stands out a little bit that Tony Kanaan is 24th out of
25.
Yeah,
that was surprising.
However, he's 24th. He's 8/10 of a second off the fast speed, time. So that shows you how tight it is. And if you just make one little mistake, something isn't there. That's still a concern. If I'm Tony Kanaan, I'm not happy about that, but it means you're not as far off sometimes as you otherwise would be.
You think he can make that up? Yeah, I do. I don't know if he gets all the way to the top, but I'd be surprised if he was any lower than about 10th or 12th come qualifying tomorrow. I did see was handed a trap speed report, which is always an interesting, but maybe a little bit. You know, you can put too much emphasis into it, but that front straightaway trap speed, pretty significant still for the Chevrolet advantage.
Yeah.
So, and I asked Graham Rahal about it mid-afternoon. I said, how much of a difference? And he said, 3 to 4 miles an hour, and that's about what the trap speed showed. So,
TracksideOnline.com reported that all of the Hondas had mileaged out their engines and have new engines except Hinchcliffe, Connor Daly, and Gabby Chavez.
Yeah, the two coin cars. And, you know, Hinchcliffe, he missed, you know, time at Phoenix, for example, and that's probably why he didn't max out. They will all do. I know the two coin cars. I talked to Dale Coyne today about this. He said his two cars will max out during the Angie's List Grand Prix on Saturday. He's actually excited about that. That means he'll have those two cars will have fresh engines come Monday morning or Monday afternoon for the Indy 500 practice. I don't know that it makes a great deal of difference, but, you know, you've gone through the 200 miles of the Angie's List Grand Prix. You would think, just like tire rubber, that maybe a few less laps would make a difference.
And those on this engine cycle that just got new engines, they're expected to run this weekend, including this 200-mile race, then practice and qualify, correct?
Correct.
And then no matter where they're at, they get a fresh engine for the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah, but it's advantageous to, you know, I would expect to go into qualifying with a little better, little newer, fresher engine. But ultimately, they're probably all about the same.
You know, I think some things that stood out to me also, we mentioned the top 10, but also I think of interest is that Spencer Pigot was 12th overall. I think that's highly impressive.
It
We've
is
talked
impressive.
Before how little track time he's had to come out there and be in the middle. That's pretty good for him. Gabby Chavez being 16th, his first time with this team and his first opportunity of the season. It did help that he did get to do a couple of tests with Schmidt-Peterson filling in for Michaela Lotion before the season. So it's not been since last September, but still pretty good for Gabby to get in and be relatively up to speed. And you always know where you're at with your teammate. First practice, he was quicker than Connor. Second practice, not quite as quick, but pretty close.
I don't know if I'm completely going out on a limb here, but I think Spencer Pigot would have a really strong chance of being your Indianapolis 500 Rookie of the Year. I think he's been somebody, you know, we've all been watching and keeping track as he's come through the Mazda Road to Indy. And, you know, the Rahal cars have run pretty well, even though those are Hondas going into the Indy 500. You'd wonder about that. But, you know, Max Chilton's won a race on an oval in Indy Lights, but I think Pigot's going to be in the hunt. I think he's going to have a good month.
Fantastic feather in his cap if he can come up with something like that. He's still trying to build interest to do more races throughout the season, and having a good 500 is the way to get that done. And you know, to be honest, you're also, and maybe there becomes a point where, yeah, you'd still like to do something for this year, but you're really starting to work on next year.
Well, Rahal doesn't seem to have the momentum yet and the pieces in place for Pigot to continue. Don't know that for sure, but, you know, I think if they had it, they would have said so at this point. So you want to watch how that develops, and a good Indianapolis 500. That's why I'm rooting for a guy like Spencer Pigot in particular, because he doesn't have things secured beyond Indianapolis.
All right, coming up in a moment, we'll get to some of your Twitter questions at KevinLee23. Also in a few minutes, the fascinating story, overcoming obstacles with Indy Lights driver Dean Stoneman with Andretti Autosport. We'll visit with him. He'll join us here in the media center in just a few minutes. And Kurt has some news on one of the entries that people have been talking about for quite some time, and an update on that. So we'll get to that and more trackside from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on 93.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Eric Castroneves. You are listening to Trackside with Kirk Kevin and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Trackside is presented by Verizon, and we also thank Honda for their support of the program. And don't forget, you have the opportunity to start a Verizon IndyCar Series race in the backseat with a legend like Mario Andretti at the controls. Visit racewithhonda.com for your shot to lead the start of a real Verizon IndyCar Series race in the IndyCar two-seater. Keith Urban will be doing that here before the Indianapolis 500. You can do it at another race, and Keith's not going to sing for some reason, but if you would like to sing before, say, the Mid-Ohio race, feel free.
Could we
feel
just free. Play that music all through? I'll just talk over
in the background.
That. Let's just play that the
we
rest
should
of
have,
the segment.
We should have a music track for that. It's the soundtrack for the Talk of Gasoline Alley. Donald Davidson will be here coming up at 8 o'clock to talk about history of the race. By the way, if I didn't mention it again, visit racewithhonda.com for more information on Honda's fastest seat in sports sweepstakes. A couple of things I want to mention before we get back into things. First of all, along with everything going on here this weekend, our friends at NBCSN have activity this weekend. Formula One
<Our friends>.
Is back in action. Well, some of our friends, they're really good friends of mine at times.
I know they're really good friends.
Especially
of
on the 1st and the 15th. There are two things I wanted to mention with this. One is the broadcast, and we're off on Sunday, so I'll be watching Sunday morning. Maybe okay. Not live at 7 a.m., but by 8:30 or so, I'll be watching the Spanish Grand Prix, free practice 2, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., so you can watch before you come out, or some of us will already be here looking for a TV and qualifying Saturday at 8 a.m. The other thing I wanted to mention with a Formula One slant is our friends, and I can say our friends, Lee Diffie and David Hobbs and Steve Matchett, are hosting something that I think is pretty interesting for Formula One fans, race fans in general. As I've told you before, it's and you've had the opportunity too, just hanging out and listening to stories with Hobbs and Matchett are really interesting, and they've did this before. When I was up in Connecticut last fall, they were getting ready to do this, and I went to the theater where they had it, and they're having another, basically a Formula One talk. It's basically their own burger bash, where they just have fans of Formula One, fans of the broadcast, come in a more intimate setting of 400 or 500 people. That's at least what it was in Connecticut. And they just talk for a couple of hours, and then they do a meet and greet before, and there are a lot of cool things associated with that. And this one is in the Midwest. It's in Chicago, coming up on Wednesday, June 15th, 8 o'clock at Park West. And if you are interested, you can go to the website for information, jamusa.com, jamusa.com, or call 773-929-1322. Later on, I'll tweet out. I know Diff has put some things up on Twitter, and I'll retweet something he's done for that before we're done tonight, so you have information on that. Wednesday, June 15th, Inside F1 Racing with Lee Diffie, David Hobbs, and Steve Matchett. And while we're plugging things, as I'm scrolling through Twitter, I see from at IndyStar Sports, Pit Pass Live, where you were talking with Scott Dixon. Was that this morning?
That was yesterday, and I did one with Ryan Hunter-Reay as well after practice today. You know, we have this at IndyStar.com, and these are just, you know, little videos, and it's fun for me because it gives me a chance to kind of bring out the personalities of some of the drivers. Just in the one you're looking at, made great fun of Dixon and his, well, not fun of, but had a little laughs with Dixon about sunglasses. And we both decided to wear sunglasses on a sunny day. Usually in a camera shot, we take them off, but we thought, what the heck, let's just do it with sunglasses.
Speaking of the star, something I just read about an hour ago, you had some news on Buddy Lazier's efforts. Some things have changed. Car number, team name, what else?
Yes.
Driver hasn't changed. That was the big rumor going around.
That was a big rumor going around, and I'm still not 100% convinced the driver doesn't change at some point.
Really?
But I would say it's still 95% Buddy Lazier. But, you know, they go into the month with Buddy as the driver, and you know, if they have a problem, they need funding, or, you know, they'll just have to see. The problem is, sort of, there aren't really any other drivers out there with money. I mean, if somebody out there was like Gabby Chavez, who had some funding, then maybe that might change the dynamics of that car. It was interesting when I walked in and I saw a different car number presented. And I'll tell you, since it's IndyStar.com, story is already out there, it's car number 4.
Now, yeah, I saw a picture this morning of it, or maybe last night.
When you have car number 4, you think of Panther Racing, but you certainly don't think of a Himmelgarn car or a Lazier car, which is what Buddy has been known for. Even though he hasn't driven the 91 exclusively, it had certainly been the number he's most associated with.
And the team now is called Lazier Burns Racing?
That's right. Tom Burns had been in this sport a few years ago, almost 20 years ago, I suppose now. He was here with Dominic Dobson and Jeff Andretti. In fact, Buddy Lazier, in his early days, first couple years at the Speedway, forget which year that was. I think it was 92, but that was he tested that car here. So, or in one of the practice sessions. He was in the car. I don't remember if that was a practice or a test session, but I remember it was after the Andretti's had Jeff had been in the car. So it didn't it didn't go particularly well with the relationship between Jeff Andretti and Buddy, but that's okay. It worked out for the families.
All right, so we'll 33 is where we stand and where we expect to continue to stand.
Yeah, I don't see how anything else comes together at this point.
Twitter questions at Kevin Lee 23.
By the way, that could change. You know, this is one of those cars, though, one of those entries where there's not a backup car. So should something happen to Buddy Lazier's car,
sure,
now all bets have changed.
Somebody's got to scramble, and somebody's got to entice someone that doesn't really want to run an extra car, run an extra car.
Or it could be that they provide him a car, and maybe it's another driver has the funding or something. I mean, that could change the dynamics, but that's about the only way I see
that actually makes more sense. If they've already assembled a crew, somebody will lease them,
yes,
a car to let them run it, and that's probably where they're going to need some more cash. Then that's what likely would see one of these other drivers that has a little bit of money.
Let's cross our fingers that doesn't happen. I don't like the sound of any of that.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're for Buddy Lazier or you're for another driver,
I want to see Buddy have a competent car, because we know he can still figure his way out around here. He would be, I'm not going to say a race contender, but he'd be a guy you wouldn't worry about. He's going to run consistent, competitive laps if he has the opportunity.
That was a bad car last year. That was a bad car, not him. And yeah. And I detailed some of the things that they found on last year's car. So, boy, I hope it goes well for the family. And Tom Burns is a good guy, and Bob Lazier is still behind this. So you hope it works out for him.
All that's available at IndyStar.com. To Twitter now at KevinLee23. Bill at W. Slayback asks, is there a memorabilia show 500 weekend?
Yes, I think so, but I can't remember all the details.
There always has been. I don't know if he knows something that we don't. So whoever has that information, feel free to send it along, and we'll try to repeat that to the masses, or at least the three dozen people that we have listening here tonight.
Oh, there's more than three dozen.
Three dozen, actually, in the media center.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I hear enough people mention it as we pass through the garage area, so there's people out there.
Heath Hamilton asks, any chance of a photo op with you and Kurt at the Burger Bash?
Sure.
Will it be as intimate and informal as previous years?
Is the Burger Bash going to be as intimate and informal? No. I mean, from this standpoint, it's going to be a bigger show. There is significantly more content we're delivering at obviously the same cost to the consumer.
I plan on still being somewhat informal.
Oh, I think it just may not be as intimate. Yeah. It's going to be a bigger show.
It's a different feel. There's going to be a stage, I assume.
Yes, yeah, so
there's
going
stage. To be more people, so it is going to be a little bit different, but this is still going to be as informal as it possibly can. And what I would encourage is both Kurt and I will be there by at least 6:15 or so. And the radio show doesn't start until 7 o'clock. So that's the time to come up, otherwise it's after 9 o'clock or during commercial breaks. And we'll see. You know, I still like the idea of always getting the wireless mic if that's possible and just wandering around and doing things like that. But we'll set up a line for photo ops. And then after that 30 seconds, when that line is taken care of, we'll go on and do something else for both people that wanted pictures.
It's funny listening to you say this, because you've really not been involved in the discussions at all about how this Burger Bash is going to look and feel. And it's, I think it's going to be terrific.
No, I'm talking about the people that want pictures.
No, but I'm thinking about you you saying we might show up by 6:15. I mean, this is going to have a whole different look and feel, and it'll hopefully is as much fun as the past ones have been.
All right. This question is from Heath as well. Has Sam Hornish's quiet retirement after failing in NASCAR tarnished his legacy? I think the genesis of the question came from an interesting story on SI.com that I read yesterday, basically alluding to Sam being retired and happy in retirement, hanging out with the kids.
Well, that's basically the story I wrote back in February.
You think he's no longer interested in driving?
No, I don't think that. Okay. He's interested in one-offs, if you will. He's interested in good rides. He's not interested in just go having a job to have a job. Mm-hmm. He's saved his money. They've lived very frugally for a professional race car driver.
Yeah.
When you go to his house, I mean, it's a nice house, but they haven't gone overboard. They've done the right things investment wise. He wants to race with good cars, just like he ran a Penske in a Busch race or a Xfinity race. I mean, yep. He's going to take some shots with some good cars, but he's not going to take a job just to run in the back of the pack.
Well, this article made it sound like he was done. That's what I understood.
He's
like
not
what
done.
You're
he's,
talking.
I mean,
he may not be as actively pursuing it as he once was, and he's very content
and
happy where he is.
And the offers haven't come.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of drivers. Bobby Unser, you know, he's not retired. he's ready to go. It's just the offers have stopped coming. So
he spent the day sitting up here as well. And by the way, to the question that Heath asked, is his legacy tarnished? At the J. Deem saw that and responded, and I think this is a pretty good answer. It's hard to have a tarnished legacy when your likeness is on the BorgWarner Trophy. And then I would add, and he has three IndyCar championships as well. And then I would also add, even, you know, some people would talk about the late 90s and the IRL era and the fact that the talent was split. There was a lot of talent over on the kart side. Well, he still won a championship in 2006, when Penske and Ganassi, granted he's driving for Penske, but when all those guys had come back. So people inside the sport know how good Sam Hornish was in these race cars.
Well, they're asking if he's tarnished because of his NASCAR effort. And I say no. I mean, it wasn't Penske's best NASCAR years either.
Yeah.
You know, does Dixon's legacy tarnish by a couple bad seasons when Ganassi ran Toyotas, you know, for example? I mean, you have to be with the right team at the right time. And that wasn't always the best time to be at Penske.
And he says, okay, I guess I mean more of a forgotten legacy. And that's probably the better
way I would give you that to
look at it there. You know, I was happy that in the second go around, Sam started winning a little bit in Nationwide Xfinity and then ran up front when he was filling in on the Cup side for a while. Didn't ever get that Cup win, came close, but did get some Xfinity wins.
You know, the beauty, though, of Sam is that I'm not saying he doesn't care, but he's so passionate about the sport that he just appreciates his own involvement in it. You know, he doesn't get as worked up about what people said or think or do or feel. He knows that when he had the opportunity, he delivered. And I think that's the best you can do.
I was glad to see he's going to be here for the parade, and I assumed he would be, but glad to see that confirmation that, you know, he said,
he
I'm a race fan
now.
He
loves the Indy 500, too. Let's not think he went to NASCAR and said, I'm done with IndyCar, and I don't want to see it again.
And I know he wrestled with it.
He
thought about it, and I think he ultimately, you know, came down to, all right, do I really need to do that again? Probably not. But he was intrigued about the possibility, and that story we told with Mike Hull confirming a few months ago that they wanted to talk to him about replacing Dario Franchitti, and that's something that I didn't know. So that kind of tells you what people think about Sam Hornish. And, yes, he left for NASCAR after 07, and there were more road and street courses coming around. Maybe he doesn't win another championship, but he's still going to be one of the guys running up front no matter what they're doing. He would have figured it out, and he was already figuring it out. He was competitive on the road street courses. From PD Lounge, he says, I'm against celebrities weakly waving the green flag like a hanky. I want the flagman whipping dual green flags across each other. The other problem is sometimes when the start of the race isn't lined up correctly, it's hard to get it waved off, or they occasionally don't wave the flag the time they should. Maybe they wave it a little bit late. There are some challenges when you have the celebrity flag wavers in there.
But the flag doesn't really dictate what's going on. The drivers have communication with race control. They can throw the green. They can throw the yellow light. I mean, the flag is just one of the many elements used to control the race.
From Michael Hogg, last week I asked why IndyCar can't go back to Michigan, and I was wondering why not and how about Chicago?
I don't have an answer for Chicago, but I think now that the discussions with ISC are more fluid or more, you know, involved, that I think any of the ISC tracks could be in play. I just don't think we'll see Michigan. It is so fast. I mean, it's fast. It's scary fast on a Cup side. You watch those Cup races. Whew, they're fast. And, you know, run an Indy car there, I know it can be done. We've seen years and years of that. I just don't think there's a lot of appetite on even on this side of the discussion, the IndyCar side. I'm not sure there's many people in IndyCar that want to go back to Michigan.
And then you add in the fact that there weren't very many people there. And you also add in, how does that impact Detroit, having another race in the same market? Does that take away from that as well? There are some people that keep saying, as long as they have Detroit, they're not going back to Michigan. I don't know that I would go that far. I think you could do it, and obviously they used to do that. But I think it's mainly, even when they weren't running at Detroit, the last couple of years were pretty sparse there.
Even if they knew they were drawing 20,000, 30,000 people, that place is...
It is.
It's fast, and it's, you know, you better...
Scarier than Fontana?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Similar. Certainly in the same ball, in the same conversation, and no disrespect to the track, it's just fast, and you can do it. But whew.
Experience every pass, pit blip, and checkered flag on your phone. Download IndyCar Mobile from Verizon to go inside IndyCar all season. Data usage applies. Available on select devices. I'm telling you, if you're coming out here this weekend, you need to have the IndyCar app. You've got the little marching ants to tell you where the cars are at. You can click on an individual driver and get a look at their throttle traces and their braking and where they're at on the track and so much more. And then, obviously, the timing and scoring because you're lost. By the way, the LED displays are working really well.
They really are.
This is going to be noticeable on the front stretch, in the stands. Yeah, yes, they're going to be going 30, 40 miles an hour faster for the 500, but certainly for this race, as they speed by us, as we sit in the media center, same vantage point as they have on the other side in the grandstands, easily to distinguish the numbers, and they tell you what place the driver is in. Good stuff. All right, more to come, including a visit with Indy Lights driver Dean Stoneman, who has a remarkable story of recovery. This is Trackside, 93.5, 1070 The Fan.
Hey, this is Ryan Hunter-Reay, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Thanks for staying with us. Trackside continues, presented by Verizon on 93.5, 1070 The Fan. We are at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and the month of May is officially underway. And this weekend, it's road course weekend for the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Kurt Cavan will be back along in a few minutes. He's here finishing up some things for the Indianapolis Star. I'm Kevin Lee, and an opportunity to talk a little bit about the Mazda Road to Indy, and one of the really good stories this year for a couple of reasons. One, he's a really good driver, and I think he's going to be in IndyCar at some point. And two, he's overcome more than almost all of us have. Dean Stoneman drives for Andretti Autosport, the number 27 Stelrecht car, his first year in Indy Lights. Before we get into your backstory and how you got to where we are, how did it go today? I saw you were, I think, fourth quick in the second session this afternoon.
Yeah, start off saying thanks for having me today. It's been a great pleasure to be invited along. But yeah, today it was challenging at the beginning. We improved the car from previous test days, and then we've come here and a little bit on a back foot. Previously, I've had no testing in the car, so it's been quite a learning curve for me to come along from Europe racing and testing straight into the Indy Lights car, which has been challenging. It's been difficult, but we've been chipping away as a team, working really well together. Joe, my engineer, we've been speaking for hours on the phone, emails back from the Fords. But yeah, today was a good day, but we were on the back foot at the beginning of the day because we were looking to be fast, but the car wasn't quite there where we wanted it to be. Then we've gone out this afternoon, and over lunch we discussed we improved the car quite dramatically in the second session.
Dean has a significant background of success in Europe, won the Formula 2 title back in 2010, also has won races, five races in 14 in GP3, and then also raced in GP2, and we'll talk in a moment about why that gap is in there. But want to go back to what you were talking about, making the adjustment. What is different? What is the adjustment from racing in Europe to racing here in this series in the States?
Yeah, it's a life-changing career. It's not just let's go racing. You've got there's family life. There's the whole picture is completely different from Europe, because European races are 2 hours on a flight, and on a Sunday, Monday, you return home. But it's not the case here. For me to travel from England to America every time, it's very expensive, and it's a long time and your body fatigues. But yeah, it's different in ways, like the atmosphere, the crowds are completely different to what you expect in Europe. Like people walking around the pits, it's completely different, whereas European racing, it's sealed off and you go racing. But it's just the atmosphere here is completely different, and people, when you wake up in the morning and people are happier themselves, it just makes your day so much better.
We're happier here.
I think it's all the sugar you have.
The sort of sugar that we have.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of donuts consumed, I've noticed, here on racetrack mornings at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They seem to be in heavy supply. All right, let's talk about how you got here. Dean Stoneman is joining us for Andretti Autosport, Indy Lights driver. You're ready to go Formula Renault 3.5 racing. You're on the path to Formula One. How old are you in 2011? You're 19 or 20? In that range?
Yeah, it was 19, yeah, 20.
19 years old, and then everything changes. And some may have seen the release that you overcame testicular cancer, but then you read a little bit deeper, and I hear a little bit deeper. There are different levels of having cancer. Basically, as I understand it, you had it bad, and this wasn't just, all right, I'm going to have to miss some racing. How concerned were you about everything at that point?
Yeah, I think to go from winning a Formula 2 championship, Julian Palmer, to be finishing second in the championship just shows how great I was. And then I tested for Williams at the end of the year in November. I remember 16th of November 2010, after winning the championship. Done a great time, great job for Williams in the car. Done great time, the time, so to show how quick I was.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, in January 2011, I got diagnosed with testicular cancer, and it was a life-changing moment. But, yeah, it was difficult year. There was a lot of emotion. It was up and down. There was 6 months of chemotherapy, and to be told by the specialist, who was the best in the world in what I had, for him to tell me I got a 30% survival chance if I wasn't treated within the next 2 hours, it was a no-go.
That's the part of the story that I remember, that it's okay, it's one thing, it's bad enough that you've got cancer, okay, when do we need to come back, but they tell you we've got to start now.
Yeah, it was, I remember me and my dad were sitting there with the specialist, and it was, yeah, it was hard. But it wasn't, it was very difficult. But the guy said to us, said to my dad, there's a cancer leaflet, that's what's wrong with him. The cancer I had was called choriocarcinoma, which is very aggressive. It can spread through your body. There's two different types you can have. One, it stays down below. Mm-hmm. And the other type will just spread with no symptoms. But mine spread through my right testicle, liver, lung, chest and brain, which was very aggressive. And
whoa.
They counted 250 tumours on the scan, which was crazy. At my HCG, which is a blood marker level, was registering 500, 7,000, and it's the fourth highest he's seen in 35 years of treating patients.
So 11, racing is not a thought. 12 is when you started feeling better, and you took a different path back to racing. Not a race car. Not even on land?
Yeah, I went powerboat racing.
Of course!
Yeah, I went powerboat racing. Basically, I didn't feel ready to get back into a racing car. I just wasn't physically and mentally strong enough to get back in a car. So I decided to go powerboat racing. It's been the family. My dad was powerboat world champion in 1995, offshore powerboat champion. So it's been in the family. I've always been on the water, so it's what I...
Had you done it as a kid?
I hadn't raced,
Or just been around it?
I'd been around it, and my dad's had boats, and it was a case of knew how to drive a boat. I was very good at boating. But it was the case of I had a phone call saying, we've got a sponsor for you to go into this powerboat championship, P1 Superstock in the UK. We can supply your boat, and there'll be a season for you to race under the name of Pickford Removal. So we took that, me and my best friend at the time was Dean Palin. We used to call him Little Dean. So it was, a career change. It was just more after the trauma I went through. It was a bit more of enjoyment rather than putting so much strain on my body to try and get back to where I was. I just wanted to go out and just do something, like put racing to one side, because I knew that racing would come at some point. A lot of side effects from the chemotherapy. I just knew that I could race the boat, but I couldn't race the car. So it would take time for me to train to get back into where I needed to be. But yeah, we done the powerboat racing. We won 9 out of 10 racing, come second in one. It was a great year, and I gave my best friend at the time an opportunity to race with me, because he had a cystic fibrosis, which is the lung disease, which he didn't... wasn't expected to have a long life expectancy, but I gave him the opportunity to race for me because I'm such a good friend. And unfortunately, his life got taken in a car crash before.
Oh, wow. Oh. Dean Stoneman is joining us from Andretti Autosport, one of their Indy Lights drivers competing here this weekend. So then you drive sports cars in 13, and then 14, you're back in GP3. So for those that don't know, that's two steps away from Formula One. You're racing Formula One tracks, Formula One weekends, and you win 5 times that year. But you still didn't feel physically right at that point. When did you feel like you were back?
Still don't.
Really?
No, it's say feel good. I feel good in parts of me, but then from the chemotherapy, it's not. It's with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So it's not the case of when am I going to get better. I feel good, but I've got many side effects that go along with with having the chemotherapy, for instance.
Wow, because it was such a strong dose and so significant.
Yeah, I think where they have to hit you so hard and the chemotherapies are so strong, to have 6 months of chemotherapy, 4 operations, my body is going to take many, many years to recover, and it may, well, my specialist said the chance of it recovering would be very slim, but all I can do is everything I can to make sure I'm the best in myself at the time.
Yeah, and because of your fitness level, and this is where having the goal of being a professional athlete helps. You're in better shape than most people your age, so that helps combat, I would think, what you're dealing with. So now let's get to how you come to America.
Yeah.
What led you here?
It's been on the cards because I tested with Andretti back in the day. It was after I had cancer, actually, and that's when 2012. Is that end of 2011? It was, and I just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
I just decided to call it a day and just take a back step, and then it's always been on the cards ever since then. But I've had great opportunities in between that have been given to me, being sponsored by Red Bull, having GP3, then World Series by Renault with Red Bull. So I had a great opportunity to get back to F1. I got very close again. But unfortunately, in circumstances, we decided to do a one-year deal with Red Bull. And then we had this in the pipeline if that didn't plan out.
Are you committed to staying this path if all goes well?
Get
to an IndyCar seat now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Now I've made the jump across America. It's so much more enjoyable. The racing's very good, but then everything outside of racing is so much better. The lifestyle is a lot more enjoyable, like the weather, but unfortunately today it's taking a turn for the worst. But yeah, it's the whole package, I feel, is right for me.
And it wasn't your first time in America. Your family has spent a little bit of time vacationing in Vegas at times, so you've at least been to America before. I'm sure that helps the transition.
Oh, yeah. I've done America quite a few times. It's not new to me, but it feels like when you come to Vegas, it's a holiday.
But yeah, Vegas is not typical of America. That's true.
But I think if you, when you come across, you have to stop treating it like a holiday, because it's nice weather, it's a nice place, you end up treating it like a holiday, and it shouldn't be a holiday, it should be it's a job, and it's very easy to slip, and luckily I'm on the road though.
And it sounds like you're on the road to success. The car was really good. You were strong at Barber. You qualify second, then a mechanical in the first race. You don't get the race, but then you get your first podium. Do you feel like now, are you on the brink of a win? Are you ready to break through?
Yeah, but first of all, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my sponsor, Stelrecht. I would still be in the UK, or I wouldn't know where I'd be. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Stelrecht, my sponsor, and Andretti to put a deal together for me. So if it wasn't for them, I don't know where I'd be.
What's your connection? That's a construction company in California?
Yeah, it's a construction company, yeah. Bob Stelrecht has very kindly put up a sponsor for me to race with Andretti and Indy Lights, which was, we were very pleased for him to make the offer.
Did you know him before?
No, it was Andretti contacted us and asked us, would we be interested in racing with them? They've got a potential sponsor, and when Bob found my story,
that's fantastic. So you are a hired driver, and the general thinking is, well, there aren't any of those, that you have to know someone. You're not necessarily a ride buyer, but everyone knows someone that has enough money to get them funded. So that's a good story and a reason to believe for all the young drivers out there that you can get hired to drive for a good team.
Yeah, you can, and I'm very grateful my dad brought me to a point. And then it's now taking over. My hard work and is paying off. And if it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't be sat here now. But if it wasn't for Bob, I wouldn't be racing this year.
Well, it's the reasons I wanted to have you on, because your story is interesting twofold. Because you're, from all accounts, and I'm not an expert on identifying who's good in a race car, but enough people that do know have said Dean Stoneman is good in a race car. Sidetrack now still has an opportunity to fulfill his dream, so we're happy for you. We're glad to have you here in America, and best of luck. What do you think of this place?
It's definitely different from what I've experienced in the past. It's a different track to what I've experienced. There's a lot of high speed here. You've got two long straights, but there's some, say, medium and low speed corners. They are medium and low speed corners, so it's trying to get the tyres to work, and the Cooper tyre is different to what I've raced on previously. And yeah, it's just trying to switch the tyre on, the Cooper tyre. Yeah, it's going to be a good year, and have good sponsors. Derek behind me, Cooper Tires, Mazda Road to Indy. They're all supporting me and team, and every driver win the series.
Wait till you start going the other way and you hit 200 miles an hour going down the straightaway.
I'm excited now.
Hey, thanks for coming over. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Dean Stoneman is the driver of the number 27 Stelrecht Andretti Autosport Indy Lights car. He'll be racing twice this weekend, late tomorrow afternoon, so you could still go to work and come over and watch Dean get going. I think around 4:30 is green flag time for Indy Lights Race 1, and Race 2 is on Saturday afternoon, which you will see on NBCSN a week from Sunday. Slightly tape delay, but we'll have it at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, the 22nd. Stay with us. We've got more to come. Trackside is presented by Verizon. And don't forget, you can go inside Indy with IndyCar Mobile. Listen to team radio feeds, watch live in-car cameras and more. Only on your phone, only on Verizon. Data usage applies, available on select devices. This is 93.5 and 1070 The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Another full day of activity coming up tomorrow at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway on the road course for the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Gates open at 8 a.m. and more USF 2000 Pro Mazda Indy Lights action. They will qualify and have one race each tomorrow. So the first USF 2000 race is at 1:10, followed by the Pro Mazda race. The Indy Lights race is at 4:40. Another IndyCar practice tomorrow from 11 until 11:45, which you can hear on IndyCar.com and the IndyCar mobile app. And then IndyCar Series knockout qualifying in the Firestone Fast Six, 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So much still to come this weekend. All right, a couple of more tweets at KevinLee23. Micah at, oh, he's smart. He gets Moose in his handle at MooseCar13. Why was Coda never mentioned as a Labor Day replacement? They want events and the track would be a draw to fans. I wondered about that just very briefly, but I think to go to Coda, you need to make sure it's more a long-lasting circumstance. We're talking of the track in Austin where Formula One races, Circuit of the Americas. And I also know firsthand that Eddie Gossage has said, if you want to go there, you're not coming to my place. So you're not going to anger a partner in Eddie Gossage, who's been a good partner for many years, unless you know you're going to be there long term. That's not worth it just for a one-stop situation. It may come to a point, and I suspect it would be after Formula One is done, then there would be more interest that you might decide. You might decide that we really need to be there, and then you're either going to see if Eddie is bluffing or if you can make him interested in coexisting. I still think there's a chance that they could help each other. They're not that close. It's a different kind of racing. If it's spread out a little bit in the calendar, I think they both could help each other to grow more IndyCar fans that might come to Texas Motor Speedway. But he's done more research than I have, so I understand where he's thinking at this point. Darren Keene asks, is the boost going to be turned up for Fast Friday and qualifications this year? Haven't heard it mentioned by IMS or IndyCar. I just put in a request to get an official answer on that. We think so, but as you might remember, it didn't happen last year because cars kept flying through the air, so they didn't go to the qualifying boost last year. So that's still a work in progress of my understanding. So I'm efforting to find out that information, and when we get it, we'll pass it along to you. We're out of time tonight. Thank you for joining us. At least we're out of time in this program. But it continues with Donald Davidson. Call in now, 317-239-1070, to talk about the history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the 500 on the talk of Gasoline Alley. Thanks to Ted here on site. Also thanks to Joey Molinaro back at Emmis. And thanks to Dean Stoneman of Andretti Autosport for joining us. For Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Donald is up next on 93.5, 1070 The Fan.